Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Phoenix, Arizona, it's time for Phoenix Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Welcome to Phoenix Business Radio, broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studio inside Max6 Workspace and the Conscious Capitalism Arizona headquarters in Tempe, Arizona, where we help build businesses and connect you with the right people. I'm Karen Nowicki. I have with me two fantastic professionals in the studio. We're going to have the opportunity to speak with Dennis Legere. Did I pronounce it correctly?
That's correct.
Yay! He is the principal advocate with Arizona Homeowners Coalition, and we are very excited to learn a little bit more about how you are serving homeowners, the community, and HOAs across the state of Arizona.
That's correct.
Yeah. So we'll get into that in just a minute, but I want to introduce you to, as well, my co-host, Susan Henriksen. Did I pronounce your last name correctly?
Yes, you did.
We've been friends for, 11 years, and I don't think I rarely use your last name, if ever.
I know.
I should have asked you as well. How do I pronounce that?
Henriksen.
I did good. Yes. And so in a roundabout way, Susan introduced me to Dennis because Dennis was introduced to both of us and our organizations through Rochelle Poulton, who is the owner of Arizona Credit Law Group. And Rochelle now has her own show here at the studio, and it's called Legitimate. And Dennis, you were looking for a spot for a meeting with your members and an opportunity to educate
right.
and bring everybody together. And Rochelle and her team, Stacy, I think it was, said, hey, could we maybe use Max6? Can we get Karen and Sue to help us? And we did, didn't we?
Yes, we did.
And so, we were very grateful for that.
That was a great
that
turnout.
That was a great opportunity. And when we're working with so many people across the full state, it's so hard to get organized when you have, you know, again, I try to travel as much as I can to the across the state, but to simply get people together face-to-face. We may have talked on the phone for hours or communicated other ways, but it really makes a difference to get that opportunity to see people face-to-face.
It's why I do what I do.
That's right.
It's literally
why I do what I do.
Absolutely. It's literally why we have Business Radio X, and it is an in-studio interview for mm-hmm. that very reason, because mm-hmm. relationships can be formed so much deeper and mm-hmm. so much quicker when we're eyeball to eyeball, right?
Right.
Yeah, but not always easy to do, especially mm-hmm. when you're, you know, out there and available for folks all across the state.
Mm-hmm.
I remember a couple of your members had mentioned when they were coming in, yourself included, you had driven from Timbuktu to get here, mm-hmm. right? Where do you reside? You're up in the North Valley?
I'm in North Scottsdale.
Okay.
North of the 101. Just every day when I'm coming down to the State House, it's a 69-mile round trip.
Yeah.
Every day.
It's a commitment. Yeah.
Right. So, and you know, when I travel to communities as far as Sierra Vista, south by Tucson, or south of considerably south of Tucson, by and you know, to Flagstaff, Sedona,
wherever you're needed, huh?
Whatever, everywhere in the valley, I've been there, and you know, there are people that look for help or simply want answers.
Yeah.
And they're not getting it from the communities that they live in.
Yeah. So let's back up. Let's tell folks about the Arizona Homeowners Coalition. And before we do that, though, I would love for my co-host here to tell us a little bit about you and your business.
Ooh. Well, thank you, Karen. Dennis, it's a pleasure to be here with you today. And I'm Susan Henriksen with Life Made to Order Phoenix, and we are a Five Rings financial agency. We do work across the nation to help middle Americans to navigate their financial puzzle piece to live their life made to order. Our focus is on educating individuals, families, and small businesses to confidently make their own financial decisions. So if there's a little history that you'd like, I can add that in.
I would like a little history.
Okay. Well, Trudy Wesley and I met about over 2 years ago, and I can say that Trudy stalked me quite sure on Facebook.
As she's known to do. By the way, she's sitting behind Sue right now. We have a full studio, and she just gave a stalking symbol. I don't if you could just whatever. Yeah, exactly. You knew the one, and you're not even facing the right direction. That's hilarious. Yes, she was a stalker, Facebook stalker, but for good reason. Because
yes.
Look at the partnership and the relationship that's been formed.
Absolutely. When I first met her, we chatted over Zoom, and it was a nice visit. And she invited me to come to one of their premier workshops called Wine, Women, and Wealth. And I did attend. And my first thought after going there was, oh my gosh, what an amazing way for women to network and to learn how to change their mindsets around surrounding money. Mm-hmm. And shortly after that, we had a few more conversations, and she invited Wesley to their other workshop, which is co-ed, called Money 101. And so we went to a lunch and learn, and the information that we took away from that was absolutely amazing. And I can say that Wesley's comments after the workshop was done was, where the were you 30 years ago?
I've heard him say that, actually.
I think you can fill that word in yourself. So, we walked away going away from with this information that we should have learned this while we were in high school. And this is just not something that is taught in high school. From that point, Wesley and I decided that we ought to be on a mission to share this information with everyone we know. And here we are today.
You've been doing it ever since.
Yes, we have.
Yeah, I've been blessed to attend both your Wine, Women, and Wealth and your Money 101 workshops and be a kind of a location sponsor, much like we did with Dennis and mm-hmm. your coalition.
Everybody, we're so grateful for that, too, well, Karen. My gosh, that was...
My pleasure. Mm-hmm. And everybody has walked away with the same response and reaction that you and Wes have both experienced. And so I know your family keeps growing and the folks that you're helping keep growing. So keep up the great work. Yeah,
yes.
And we love this idea around collaboration and making sure that we're, helping each other along the way. So on that note, let's turn it to Dennis again, who's eagerly waiting to tell us a little bit more, actually a lot more, about Arizona Homeowners Coalition. Tell us, let's start from the really basics for our listeners who might be listening and don't know who you are and are not familiar with how you help folks. Just give us kind of the summary and then we'll go from there.
So what we try to do is mostly educate homeowners that live in these communities, they are required to comply with certain types of conditions and restrictions in every one of these communities. So whether it's a condominium or an HOA or a property owners association, there are covenants that run with the land. They bind the buyer of a home in these communities or even the buyer of property in these communities to those covenants. It's a contract. It's not a regular contract like you get to negotiate, but it's based on what the developer put recorded as a result of that community. Unfortunately, most people don't read those documents because they're written by lawyers. They're very difficult to understand. It could be hundreds of pages of documents that involve every nuance of your life within that community. And then at some point in time, they see the home, they see the amenities, the pool, the clubhouse, the tennis courts, the parks, and they fall in love with the community. What they don't see is what this association is going to do or could do, has the power to do to their lives and how they live their life or how they even use their property. So what we try to do is to educate people of what are your requirements for your community. I've read hundreds of covenant documents for various communities for people that we've tried to help and reveal to them what they can and can't do, but also what they should do in relation to maintaining a community. Because fundamentally, all of these communities are communities first. They happen to all be incorporated as a nonprofit corporation, but that's really for convenience. So too many times these communities are run as corporations and they forget the fundamental basics that they're communities first. They're about people, raising families, or living your life in your home, trying to enjoy whatever life you where you may be in your life cycle. You know, we in Arizona have a good many senior communities where they sell the amenities to that community, but also come with covenants and a board of directors where one individual could in fact dictate how anything happens in your particular life in that community. So we educate, we try to look for opportunities to help them understand or to help work them through solving problems. So the only issue my biggest struggle is to get to the point where people know that we exist. I can't help anyone who doesn't know about us. We can't reach the 3.5 million homeowners in this state alone that live in these communities. If you think about that, that's half the population of this entire state live in one of a condominium or at a planned community of some sort. Why is that so large? Arizona is actually one of the highest population of common interest communities in the country. California is tops, Texas, Pennsylvania, Florida, then Arizona. And that's, again, the biggest driving is, when were our communities built? When was the development in Arizona taking place? These communities started on the East Coast, but they ended up, Arizona was built in the 40s and 50s and 60s, all of these communities became the preferred method for developers to build. Municipalities like that, because they get to not have to pay for recreation facilities or parks or other items like that, and yet they still get the taxes from those homeowners. So a homeowner in one of these communities pays taxes to the municipality and pays the assessments for their common property use. So it's a form of double taxation. But those are the fundamental issues. But what we really drove on was initially I got involved with a small group. There might have been 15 tops that was meeting with a particular senator to try to talk about what problems they were experiencing in HOAs. And what I very quickly realized is there's nobody from the perspective of the homeowner talking to the legislator. There's bills that have been passed based on an individual homeowner talking to an individual legislator, but not defending and that they may have been arguing based on a specific issue in their community. And whether they were successful or not successful was very much a chance. How aggressive the legislator went to push that issue of his or her constituent. So as we were discussing that, that group of 16 people started to brainstorm and said, we need to do something different. The status quo that got us in the last 30 years to wherever we are. And in fact, in many cases, Arizona statutes are better than most relative to the protection of homeowners. And that was basically based on the work of these pioneers, these individuals working on an individual issue to try to get a legislator to fix their statutes. And what we decided was we need a presence. We need to be able to be available to all the legislators to help them understand what's happening in these communities. There's a large hesitation from the legislators and the governor to be involved in these private communities with their actions. Yeah, you can imagine that they get asked to do lots of things for lots of reasons. And you know, I won't get into the process of campaign contributions and paid lobbyists.
Another
and
whole
all
segment.
Of that. But the reality is there. I mean, they have to get elected. They need money to get there elected, and people who contribute financially to political committees or political candidates get the ear of that candidate. We're trying to work our approach in a different way. And what I call it is the old-fashioned way, face-to-face, person-to-person, so that people can see who I am, what I'm trying to do, and establish my credibility or our credibility as individuals to them. And quite frankly, that has been very well received by the individual legislators. whether they vote in support of our bills may or may not happen, but they understand that while they are a lobbyist that, you know, and 10 times, there are more than 10 times the number of lobbyists as there are legislators. But, and most of them are all paid professionals. Most are attorneys, young and old. But they have a lot of presence. And these legislators are inundated with requests from all of these lobbyists. What we decided to do is to take a different course. We have lobbyists. I am the lead lobbyist for our organization, but we're not compensated. We don't want to take any money. Early on, what we realized is that there are far too many people with the hands in the pockets of those homeowners, whether it's a management company or a vendor, or you are unconditionally bound to pay whatever the association charges you. And in doing that, your pockets are their pockets. When you look at the lobbyists, there's two professional trade groups in Arizona that are most involved, AACM and CAI. AACM is a local association of community managers, Arizona Association of Community Managers, and CAI is a national organization. CAI, Community Association Institute, was really at the beginning of the, in the 1950s, was part of the beginning of the, how HOAs were developed across the country. They are a very powerful voice. A lot of money goes into those two communities, but every dime that goes into both of those trade groups comes out of the pocket of the homeowner, mm-hmm. one way or the other. And yet, they don't represent the homeowners. They represent the business interest that serve these communities because of that unlimited cash cow.
Wow.
You know, there's nowhere else where you have no limit to what you can charge an individual to support your cost. Whatever their cost they can apply, it gets automatically rolled down to a homeowner. So that's what we started seeing, is we need that presence. We need to be able to get a voice at the legislature so that all of these 3.5 million people can be heard. The interesting thing is all the legislators have heard prior to us were complaints about this bad thing or that bad thing or this injustice or that injustice. They never heard a message or basically an explanation of fundamental rights of these communities, that you still have property rights. You still have contract rights in signing that contract. It's not a one-way deal. There's as binding aspects of these contracts on the communities as there are on the homeowners. So that voice, that message needs to be heard by the legislator if we're going to truly protect homeowners. Now, we talked earlier about these governing documents. Those documents were written by lawyers for the developer to protect the interest of the developer to be able to develop that property and sell it. And for most of these large developers, they simply move on and build another development and another development. Those documents also were structured to benefit the continuation of that developer, which is the board and the association that runs the community. There's very, very little in those community documents that talk about the fundamental rights of the homeowners, the property rights of the homeowners within those communities, your fundamental constitutional rights. There are many advocates that have in the state that have basically stipulated that or said that all of these communities are a breach in our overall constitutional rights. That because the Constitution, again, and I digress a little bit, but the Constitution was built to protect the people from their government. That's what the Constitution is about, to protect the people from their government. Your government is restricted on doing things that the people have as fundamental rights. Because these communities are not official public bodies or official governments, they are exempted from the requirements of the Constitution. Mm-hmm. So your individual constitutional rights can be stepped on by these corporations because it's a private contract and a private corporation. And that's the fodder that builds the problems that occur in these communities. HOAs are not fundamentally wrong. The concept is fundamentally flawed. It's flawed because it forgets human nature. When you have absolute power over everything that happens in a community, absolute power corrupts absolutely. And board members may be well-intentioned, but with time, they get that sense of power, and that's when individual rights get abused. That's why we need protections. It's only in state statutes where the homeowner's rights and will be protected. You are not protected by the governing documents. And besides, there's 9,500 different communities in this state alone. Wow. How would we change 9,500 different sets of condominium or HOA documents? But we can establish a fundamental protection and right in state law that affects all of them. And that's what bred our organization. That's what we want to try to do, is to advocate for the homeowner to the legislators such that we can get statutes that protect our fundamental rights. I don't want the government, I don't want the state to be involved in oversight of these communities. I don't want them to be regulating these communities. There's a good many of our members that feel that regulation is important because there's no accountability. There's no one to go to. And, you know, if you have a problem, the board is it. They are the absolute authority. The only recourse any homeowner has is to go to court, is to try to enforce the law either through our dispute resolution process with the Department of Real Estate or with Superior Court, and in some cases, Justice Court. But again, all of the hands are in your pocket already. Can you afford, can very many of us afford to be able to go to court to enforce the law?
I don't know many homeowners that can handle that kind of
burden, financial responsibility, time commitment,
right,
expertise, knowledge. We're lacking all that.
All of it. And we have a homeowner in Tucson that felt that her association was violating the open meeting laws in the way that they were conducting their meetings and holding their elections. And quite frankly, she was absolutely correct. She went to court. She went to the appellate court, lost in both cases. Based on the nuances of the exact language in the statute. So $150,000 of her personal money was spent on a lawsuit to deal with open meeting and transparency in the government of her community.
Did anything good come out of that for her?
Pardon?
Did anything really come good from that? What she tried to do for
her? She was part of our original group. And I committed to her that I may not be able to fix what she lost, but I would clarify the law so that the principle that she was fighting for is clarified in the law so that it can't be questioned by attorneys. See, I'm not an attorney, and I don't get to interpret the law because I'm not a licensed attorney. I don't get to give legal advice. but no one can keep me from reading the law.
Right.
And the law is written in Arizona in very plain language. There's not a lot of legalese in our statutes, like a lot of other states. Our laws and our legislators have built a set of statutes that are very plain English. So they're understandable, but the issue that happens the most in these communities is attorneys advise the boards, and the boards and the attorney is allowed to interpret the law by his license. And they're interpreted into whatever way that helps that particular board or whatever way they want the board, the law, to be twisted. So, or interpreted. I'll correct that.
View.
The issue is, without clarity, it opens the door for all of these interpretations. So a lot of what we've tried to do in our work is to provide more clarity, because more clarity in the law eliminates the wiggle room and the ability of attorney to distort that impression. I've kind of rambled on, and I know you don't want to. I can talk for hours about what we're trying to do.
You're here to tell the story. Yeah, this is important.
But we're here first to help one-on-one individuals with any questions, to help communities. I try, and we try, to represent all the homeowners. The homeowners that are happy in their community, 3.5 million Arizonians can't be all wrong. Right. There's a reason why they buy in these communities. There's a reason why they like the community they live in. But unfortunately, all of these communities are one board member away from absolute hell. Goose the explanation.
You can do that on internet radio. You can use the word that hell or even words that are worse.
But that's the reality, is that those that are happy with their communities, I'm here for you too. I want to be your advocate to make sure that what is good about your community can be leveraged in other communities.
And stays good in your
right.
community.
The board members, each and one, every one of those board members is a homeowner. And I want to represent your perspective as well. Being on a board is it's a thankless job. Mm. You can never make everyone happy. But your job is not to make anybody happy. Your job is to simply do what you believe is best for your community. Right. If you do that, no matter what you do, you are right. Okay? Because that's what your community puts you there to do, to make those decisions that you believe are the best interest of your community. Not a special interest, not a group, not a one click versus another click, or I don't like that person. The opportunity for individual bias against an individual mm-hmm. because of ethnic background, of financial or age, or
like
single
you.
Or marital mm-hmm. status, that opportunity is magnified within these communities because of that absolute power.
And the way that it's designed right now, that window is open for that to happen.
It's open for it to happen.
Yeah.
And there's very little recourse that keeps it from happening because it's not a government agency. It's not a government.
So the question is, Dennis, is do you actually have the ability to meet with individual communities and the board members as a whole
yeah.
to coach them and to educate them further on how to keep their community from blowing up?
There was a very small community. I do that. And it was a very small community in Gilbert that had a long-standing entrenched board that was abusive. Very small, low-income families. This is townhouses. And I drove there and met with them and helped them organize essentially a coup where they recalled their board and then had volunteers. And I spent time training the new board members, because the message I told them is the first thing I want you to do is to remember what it feels like under the old regime.
Right.
Because that's what you got to protect yourself from doing that again. You have to keep yourself from falling back into the trap of what happened to you before. So those are the kinds of things that I try to do. There's a community that I'm working with the individual board with that just did basically the same kind of thing. Recouping your ability to take control of your community. No matter what happens in these communities, you have the fundamental power and the right to elect your board and to remove them if they are not serving your purpose. Mm-hmm. Quite frankly, that's the biggest argument that I get from legislators. Why aren't homeowners fixing their own problem? Why are you coming up to us?
Well, I can tell you, we lived in a community for, I'd say, a better part of 20 years, and we would get the notices to vote, mm-hmm. yet we never saw the results.
Right.
We didn't know how many votes these people got and how they kept their seats. We were never notified. And I always found that very odd, why those same people were always in place all the time, when I know the majority in our community was very unhappy mm-hmm. with the people that were running.
Right.
It was absolutely amazing to me. And when you'd ask the question, why am I not getting the results? You wouldn't even get an answer. It was right. like a pin drop.
That's right. You know, there's one aspect of the law that we have, and that is every homeowner is entitled to the right to make a records request over financial documents of any record of the association. Now, the attorneys will say, oh, well, it's because you're a corporation, you're only limited to certain types of attorneys, of records, I'm sorry. But that's not at all true. That's not what the Arizona law says for these communities. It says any record. As long as it's not confidential, any record you're entitled to get. Yet, in the last 10 years, there have been 14,777 different cases in Superior Court in this state alone dealing with HOAs. 14,777. Wow. By far, the majority of all of those cases were dealt with the very simple thing of asking for a record and not getting it.
Wow.
You know?
That's amazing.
There isn't something simpler than that. There's a community in Prescott that a simple record request for records from the board ended up ultimately in Superior Court, and with the entire board resigning and the entire association having it put into receivership by the court because nobody could buy or sell a home. There was nobody to pay any bills. There was no board. No wow. homeowner wanted to run to the board under that chaos. But rather than disclose the records that would have revealed suspicious activity, they chose to simply hide and run away.
Yeah, and hoping maybe that the opposing group would just back down at some point.
Exactly.
And just not follow through. Run out of money, run out of time, out of energy.
That's a simple records request ended up dealing with ultimately a receiver being assigned by a court to run the association as a dictator. Now, as it turned out, that receiver was a breath of fresh air because he was a professional and he took care of business for that community, and the community is far better off. And now they will be able to come out of receivership and deal with their, you know, running themselves. So that was a blessing. It was very expensive for the community. And again, every dime came out of the pockets of the homeowners.
I was going to say that, obviously, where does that money come from? So the homeowners are paying for it.
Another case of a community in Sun City West. Elderly woman, totally handicapped, in a wheelchair bound, made a simple records request for a community financial statement. The association refused. she filed a petition with the Arizona Department of Real Estate and administrative law judge. I was there. I attend as many of these hearings as I can, for one thing, to support the homeowner, but also to learn. Mm-hmm. I've been through every, and we have, again, myself and other advocates within the group, to every hearing. We've read every case story, because with every case, the decision, whether you win or lose, can be used to help another homeowner later on, to better prepare, to better organize, to be able to prevail in that case. So that's what we do. It's a very fine line between legal advice and advice based on experience.
Sure.
I keep with me everywhere I go, I think I showed you that the last mm-hmm. time we met, I keep with me what defines the practice of law, because I have to be very careful not to cross the line as to what I do or what I say, you know, because there's going to be a target on my back from all of these attorneys that are making a fortune off of these communities.
Right.
So to protect myself, I've got to be diligent on dealing with those issues.
So, Dennis, curiosity here. What is your background?
I'm an engineer.
Okay.
I was a chemical engineer.
Hence detailed.
And detail-oriented, I ran nuclear power plants. So I worked for a Fortune 500 utility that operated 12 nuclear power plants, and I was a corporate director for a division of that corporation. So 33 years of my work career was focused on nuclear power.
Wow.
I retired. I finished my corporate world in 2008, and then consulted for 4 more years. So I consulted to the entire industry from then, and then went and in 2012 decided that it's too much time away from family. It's time for me to end. And
how did it come that you decided to come into this whole realm of homeowners associations?
And as a volunteer.
Yes.
Well, it's an interesting story, because I was on my own board in my own community.
Okay.
And being on the board, I was the treasurer. Now, I happen to have a lot of experience in finances, as you do. But in other places that I lived, I was actually the committee chairman for the finance committee for that whole municipality. So I dealt with all of the long-term financial planning of that community. But I get on the board and I start seeing some very peculiar behavior in the finances of that association. So I start looking for records. And then what I start getting is the community manager is starting saying, well, this board member is asking all kinds of questions about finances. If you don't stop him, then we're going to have to charge you more money. And as incredible as that seemed, that the treasurer would be of the board would be limited on what kind of financial resources he would be able to see. Well, as it turned out, there were a lot of inappropriate activities taking on in the financial world. Small community, 86 homes, and a lot of favoritism. If you were a friend of an individual, then you got special treatment. If you were not, then you didn't get special treatment. And, you know, I actually even discovered that a board member had been delinquent in their assessments, and the association paid all of her penalties and fines for her. And
how does that happen?
Just because. And friends in low places, exactly. But ultimately, I got a lot of that corrected. But I got to the point where the rest of the board was the good old boys club. Okay. Wasn't happy that somebody's shaking
rocking
up,
the apple cart.
Rocking the apple cart. So I awfully left the board, and then I started pursuing the board as a homeowner. I felt I would have better power to pursue justice as a homeowner as opposed to an actual board member. Ultimately, what I did is I took the association to the administrative law judge based on open meeting violations.
Okay.
We had four counts. It cost me $2,000 to pursue that case. The association hired two lawyers to defend themselves, and I prevailed.
Good for you.
But I prevailed just simply because the law is clear. And this is all open meeting violations. They were holding meetings in secret. They were, rather than face me in a public forum, they decided to do all their business by email or phone call. So this association got fined, actually, not only paying my application fee, but got fined $2,000, which, as small as that is, was the largest fine ever given to an association in this state since 2007.
Still?
That's it.
Wow.
And so after that, I took the case history to the Arizona Association of Community Managers and CAI and simply asked them, look, this is the law. This is how these open meeting laws should be done. You need to include this kind of case and this information to your training so that the rest of the community managers can better understand that. After months of harping on them to get some kind of response, I get a letter from their attorney that says, thank you very much, but we're not going to include this in our training because we don't have to. And
thank you very much. This is the right thing to do.
Yeah.
And law. But we're not going to.
We don't have to, so we're not going to train our community managers on what's right.
Wow.
And they awoke the bear.
And there is your answer, Trudy. Or
yes.
Sue. Why do I keep doing that? Trudy's behind you.
Yes.
And I've known you forever, and I still do that. I don't know why. Sisters, I guess. And you're behind the mic for the first time like
yes,
this.
I am.
So I says, I have to do something, no matter what it takes, to make this situation better.
Well, thank you for that.
I tell you, Dennis, I don't think our homeowners realize what kind of angel they have around them right now, because seriously, we just need to get the word out about your association and get you some
And that's what activity. I'm looking for. That's why I'm here today.
Yeah.
I mean, there are people that I help that are incredibly grateful. I don't ask for money from people. But people volunteer donations to the group. Again, I don't ask for a membership fee. Joining our organization, being part of our website is hoatruth.com. Everybody should take a look at it. I've spent a lot of my own personal money to build that case, but also through the contributions of members to build that website to be the best that it can be. We're still working. We're still growing, but it's going to be our tool that helps people to understand. You have an opportunity to ask me a question that I can share the answer to everybody. When people write me a letter or an email, I can respond to them, but it's only one-on-one.
Right.
When I can respond and use that website to respond, and other people can see the same answers, it'll raise eyebrows. It'll raise the eye. Oh, that happens to me too. What could we do different?
Right.
How can we make our community the best that it can be? And that's all I really seek, is to make these communities the best that they could be. There are flaws in the concept for planned communities, but we can still fix that if we are engaged, if we are allowed to be engaged. Some people have told me that apathy runs rampant in these communities. And I don't believe that. I don't believe that apathy is an ingrained, is something that people are naturally tended to. apathy is developed. Mm-hmm. Apathy is grown, mm-hmm. and it is nurtured in order to protect the status quo. If you're not allowed to speak at a meeting, why are you going to go to a meeting? If you're not allowed to vote, or if you vote and you find out that your vote's been disqualified for some fabricated reason, why are you going to get involved? If you raise a complaint, or if you raise a question and you become singled out and you become targeted for retaliation, why are you going to get involved?
Right.
There are communities and people that I've talked to in the Tucson elderly community again, wanted me to go and speak to them. We arranged for, I'll travel anywhere in this state to speak to people. But because that's the only way to help people understand. And they had me, I was invited to go, planning on going. They called me at the last minute. They all got cold feet.
Oh,
if
no.
The community manager found out that you were here, we would all be in trouble.
Oh, dear.
That fear approach, that fear tactic. If you dare
right.
to say anything about the board, you're going to get a letter from the attorney that says a cease and desist. Your defamation, it could be totally true, but attorneys are paid to do a job, you know, mm-hmm. and they may not even know the facts of what's going on, but they're paid and they get charged $250 to write a letter to you to try to keep you silent.
So do you see most of the challenges in some of the older communities? What I mean older, I mean like the 55 retirement communities. Do you see there's more advantage being taken of in that group versus?
I think it goes back to the fundamental human flaw, okay? Absolute power corrupts. Absolute power targets the most vulnerable victims. Mm-hmm. And single women, elderly single women, are by far the single most targeted individuals in these communities. So, yes, Arizona has a high population of senior communities, 55 and older. So they are ripe for that kind of stuff. Unfortunately, it isn't financial status. I deal with the you know, very low income communities, as well as large high income communities in North Scottsdale. Desert Mountain in North Scottsdale, 2,400 individual homes. It's one of the most abusive HOA organizations in this state. Terra Vita in North Scottsdale. I use that as my poster child of how bad an HOA can get.
Interesting.
And those are very high-end, high-cost communities.
I want to go back to your comment around, not that you said it, but the word is, or people say that people are apathetic about mm-hmm. the situation in the neighborhood. I've been in my home for 23 years, mm-hmm. and there's an HOA. And for me, because I'm still a working parent and I've been raising three kids there and just life, it's not that I don't, I'm just busy.
Yeah.
Well, I pay attention only when I have my semi-annual fees to pay, but I grunt and groan every time I see it because it goes up astronomically. And every once in a while I'll look because they, as far as I know, they're transparent and they show it either on the website or in our annual or biannual newsletter. But I'm never thrilled about the fees and how much they've gone up. Mm-hmm. I've never attended a meeting. And maybe it is because in the scale of things in my life, it's not a priority.
Right. And it should be. And I think your priorities are right. But so in choosing your life, especially if you're raising families, or even as simply a husband and wife, you still have your priorities. You want to be able to live your life.
But I also don't want to be taken advantage of.
Right.
And I don't know enough about the way the HOA works, or maybe what landscaping fees ought mm-hmm. to cost for our very small park down mm-hmm. the street that we never use. Like I kind of would like to know, because again, every time that fee goes up, I'm kind of like, oh, what the heck? Now, and my husband really gets angry about it. He wishes we didn't even have an HOA, and sometimes even you know, tongue in cheek, but maybe also serious, says, just don't pay it. I'm like, no, like I've agreed to pay. I mean, I've been in this house for 23 years. That's what we've agreed to do. But it's frustrating because there are times I feel like we've been taken advantage of. Right. And I know that there's been favoritism.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, and I don't know how many homes we have, maybe 150 in our neighborhood. So we're not really too large, but I know a few people who've been on the board forever, to Sue's point earlier. I mean, in all those years, these folks, it's the same group of people. And partly I say that's because they're the folks who have the time and the willingness and the desire and want to keep maintaining our neighborhood really mm-hmm. good. And I hope that's the case.
And I would hope too. And I think, like I said, for those communities that are run well, there are good HOAs that are run well because the board member is conscientious. The board members are truly trying to serve. Like I said, in some cases, it's very thankless. And you know, like I said, individuals will want to have one way or another way, and then they'll complain because of whatever decision you made. But what I try to tell people is, you need to respect your board for the job that you put them in place to do.
Mm-hmm.
They need to respect you as you're the community as well.
Mm-hmm.
When the boards or the community don't respect their boards or each other,
that's when
you start generating the turmoil, and it can skyrocket and mushroom into something that's an absolute terror to live in. Homeowners are busy. Some of the pieces of legislation that I'm looking to put forward is to, even a simple thing like providing an agenda of a meeting so that homeowners get a chance to decide.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to go to every board meeting just in case they talk about something that's important to me. But if I have an agenda of what they're going to talk about,
I can decide.
I can decide if I can change my schedule because I want to hear what they're saying about that issue.
Interesting. I know for years I used to be aware of the agenda and when the meetings were, but I can't tell you the last time that I've seen that.
Yeah.
So it's not a requirement.
It isn't. Currently, your agenda is required for those attending the meeting. But it's you've already decided. If you don't know about it, you don't get to attend. And again, that kind of language was put in place by organizations, not by homeowners, looking for information.
Mm-hmm.
And the engagement, even getting minutes of a meeting, the argument by the associations that I've dealt with, most of them hate giving draft minutes because they're not approved yet. Well, they won't be approved for the next month or maybe the next quarter. And then everybody's already forgotten right. what it was that they talked about. So getting draft information out or minutes of meetings or an opportunity to understand, let me make the choice to go there or not go there based on my own life commitments. You know, do I have to get a babysitter to go to a board meeting? Don't expect me to go to every board meeting to find out everything that's going on in case, especially when their board meeting after board meeting is mundane
exactly.
business. You know, one of the things that our laws do require is that every member that goes to a board meeting must be given an opportunity to speak on any issue before the board votes on it. The law is general and it says a reasonable opportunity to speak. There are some communities in this state that allow homeowners 16 seconds to talk.
How do you do that in 16 seconds?
They don't provide the agenda, so you have no opportunity to prepare for your 16 seconds of time. It just, as you can see, if everybody asked me to speak or to get my point across in 16 seconds, I would fail miserably. But that's what those boards are saying with 16-second limits is we don't want to know what you want, mm-hmm. what you say.
We don't care about you.
We don't care about you. We don't care about what you're saying. And we're going to make our decisions on our own because we can. So When communities work together and respect each other, then you become a better community. And that's what I'm looking for. That's what I'm looking to drive, not as a mandate, but as, standards.
So, Dennis, it's clear you absolutely love what you're doing. But tell us a little bit about, like, what you do in your free time. I'm not sure you have any, but what do you like to do with your off time?
I play tennis as often as I can. It's a great stress relief. It's
sure.
a great physical activity. If I'm not playing tennis, I'm walking.
Okay.
right now, I'm in the middle of a major remodel of my home, so I'm knee deep
nice.
In all of that. I was.
Did you get everything approved with your HOA?
I did, as a matter of fact.
Kidding.
Well,
you darn well better have.
What I did was I had them approved everything on the outside.
Yes.
Right.
And everything on the inside, I told them, none of your business.
Well, right. So there is a little anger management there on the inside. Yeah, demolition always takes care of a lot.
And, and tennis.
Right.
Yeah.
But I have 4 children and 7 grandchildren. And they consume me. In fact, after this, I've got to pick up the grandkids to go to soccer practice because their
fun.
Parents are working.
Yeah. Such beautiful weather for them to get outside. So
right.
That's awesome.
So we are just about at the top of the hour. It goes quickly, doesn't it?
It does.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry I monopolated the
I don't know why that we're here to be of service to you.
Yeah.
So
yes.
I'm glad. I would have been really worried if you only spoke for 16 seconds. We would have had huge issues. No, this was perfect.
No.
And I know that there's so much more.
Mm-hmm.
So no apology necessary. You've served us well by sharing your story and your passion, as Sue pointed out. How can our listeners help you and your organizations to help themselves?
Right. The best thing that anybody can do is join our organization. When I can get to a point, again, there's 3.5 million homeowners in the state to leave it communities. If I could get 10,000 members, they don't charge you anything, but 10,000 names, that carries tremendous weight with the legislator. That's the sway, because all of those 10,000 names are voters. I don't focus on any one legislative district, but to simply add your name to our roster and adds your voice to ours, and the legislators will hear. All the money in the world will not overcome the voice of the people. That's what's good about this country. We don't have paid lobbyists. We don't have a lot of assets to be able to provide to political campaigns. But we have the people. And if we can get more members, unfortunately, I only have 500 right now.
Okay, so what's the website that they would go to become a member?
HOAtruth.com.
Okay, perfect.
And you have an active Facebook group? Are there other social media?
We have a Facebook account as well with that same name, Arizona Homeowners Coalition.
And is it active?
It's active. I don't do enough posting on it, but we're working on making it a better site. It's relatively new.
Good.
I focus most of my attention on the website. I believe that we have a Twitter account. I'm not a Twitter user.
Me either.
And quite frankly,
you need a good marketing person there, Dennis.
Yeah. Well, and again, on volunteer, this whole coalition is run by volunteers, is what I've heard you
that's
say,
correct.
Yourself included.
Right.
So if you're listening and you have that skill set and you care mm-hmm. about not only, Arizona law, but also homeowners, your neighbors, and that sort of thing, reach out to Dennis and connect and see if there's a place for you. But minimally, let's get on that list and make sure that the coalition continues to grow. So there's no membership fee.
Right.
You're just saying, hey, I'm interested. Here's my email address and who I am.
Periodically, will send communications to the entire group. I religiously.
I'm already a member, by the way.
Religiously protect your ID, your email accounts to make sure that they are not released in any way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's simply, I want to be able to keep you all appraised of what's happening and when we need help, when we need to contact this legislator or that legislator to move something along. Yeah. I'll do the service. I need the voice of the people to be heard at the State House.
Okay.
Wow. Lots of takeaways, Sue.
Yes.
Wow. Blown away, hey?
Exactly. I'm so excited that we had this conversation today because I don't think homeowners realize who they have on their little shoulders right now.
Yes. And to your point earlier, definitely an angel. It's fascinating that you've made this passionate commitment in your, I'm going to call it retirement years.
My wife might have a different opinion
of that passion. I've never met her, but I thought of her a couple of times. But when we have experiences like you have, mm-hmm. and you, we just were shifted to say, I get why I'm here.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
And this is your thing.
Right.
And thankfully, we've got you. And we've got the other group of people that come and participate and help and leverage. Thank goodness we have you.
Right.
Because what I'm learning is that while HOAs can be very healthy and helpful for us, as in the case with mine, I love driving down my streets because they're clean and lawns are manicured. Right. And you know, I know that the houses are painted. I understand that. But I also am hearing, and I'm thinking of some of my own stories that just weren't worthy of sharing, where I know that there is some manipulation going on behind the scenes, mm-hmm. both in pricing as well as favoritism and that sort of stuff. Okay. So fascinating conversation. Again, we've been having an opportunity to speak with Dennis Legere. And he is the principal advocate with Arizona Homeowners Coalition. And am I free to give that email address for
yes,
the coalition?
Absolutely.
It's D as in Dennis. I was going to say something else, but why not just use your first name? D.LEGERE@AZHOC.org. And everything that you shared with us in preparation for today's segment, we'll have up on the website once the podcast is published. And I want to thank Sue Henriksen for being here with Life Made to Order Phoenix. What a treat to have you sitting here as a co-host. She's good, isn't she?
She is.
I had a great time. Thank you.
Okay, well, you need to come back and play some more with us.
Okay. Is that next week?
Yes, absolutely. Sign her up. You've been listening to Phoenix Business Radio, broadcasting live from within the Max 6 and Conscious Capitalism Arizona Business Radio Studio. Some media leans left, some lean right. We lean business. Until next time, I'm Karen Nowicki. Thanks for listening.